Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Over the years, St. Louis has earned acclaim as a foodie town. STL chefs now regularly get recognition from major tastemakers like Food & Wine magazine and the James Beard Foundation. At the same time, swaths of the St. Louis metro region lack sources of good food, food that's fresh, nutritious, and close to home. Food City is a local initiative that aims to improve the food infrastructure of STL, and a large part of that is supporting existing and future urban farming. Joining us to share about that initiative and how far it's come so far, we have Sara Banura, Research and Storytelling Program Manager for the Food City Initiative. Sara, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Sara, talk with us first about Food City as an initiative and the backstory to it. What is it that prompted that effort, and who's been supporting it?
Thank you for asking that question. Food City started years ago, but the name didn't really come out until last year. Mm-hmm. The owners, the former owners of Nature's Bakery, those fake bars, they had a manufacturing facility in Hazelwood for years. And in their retirement, they decided to give back. They started a foundation called Serving Our Communities. And Food City was one of those projects. And it really came because the people who were working in Hazelwood, you know, they were getting paid well. But when you look at their neighborhoods and what they have access to, they didn't have access to nutritious food. Mm-hmm. So the Morrison family, in retirement and in wanting to serve back, they started Food City and dedicated $5 million to bring food justice to those who've been working in the food industry, yet the neighborhood, the infrastructure doesn't allow for them to live their best life as healthy as possible because of the lack of access.
Mm-hmm. So when we say infrastructure, I think people might not think of food in association with infrastructure. Sara, can you describe maybe where we see robust food infrastructure in the St. Louis region to give us an understanding of what that term means, like in real life terms?
Totally. Let's take the Central West End, for example. You'll have Whole Foods, you'll have Schnucks, and you have restaurants. And when you look at Jeff Vanderloo, a neighborhood in North St. Louis City, you wouldn't see that. One of our farmers, his name is Tyran Lewis, he even says it. He says there's nothing with any health attached to it, right? So when we talk about buildings, you see it in the lack of grocery stores. You see it in the lack of healthy food options at other, you know, services that give food, like restaurants and so on. Mm-hmm. But the food conversation is very complicated, because if you don't have roads that are set up for a truck to deliver food to a grocery store, then you cannot have a grocery store.
Right.
You know? But I think it's very important to point out that money is a big part of this. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have the purchase power, you can live anywhere and drive your car anywhere and mm-hmm. get access to healthy food. So the infrastructure is multiple layers. Maybe a mom doesn't have a car. You know, it's a single mom with no car. Mm-hmm. And all she can afford to get to feed her children is whatever's down the street. And
right.
that's most likely a dollar store or a fast food restaurant. And if it's a gas station, maybe there's an apple and a banana.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes away the choice. Choice becomes a luxury now.
Right. The term food desert has been used a lot. And then there also is food swamp and food apartheid.
Right.
How are these terms related to one another? And does it represent some kind of development maybe in mainstream understanding of what food security means?
Good question. Traditional media, mainstream media, talks about this topic under the food desert umbrella oftentimes. You know, it's so easy to blame food insecurity on food deserts, which is the lack of nutritious food in these neighborhoods. The term itself is problematic, food desert, because the land itself is not barren. You know, if we heal the soil, put a seed in it, it will grow food. Mm-hmm. It's not a desert in that sense. And the other way is these neighborhoods are not barren of food. There is food everywhere. It's just all the bad food. And that's why Meredith Knott from the St. Louis Area Food Bank and Erica Williams from Red Circle, they're the ones who said this is a food swamp, not a desert, because of the abundance of all that's bad and the scarcity of all that's good. Now, food desert is a term that the USDA used, you know, it's the geographical existence or non-existence of a grocery store, right? So the term is used because of that, of measurement. Food apartheid is not a term you would see from the USDA. And that's a term I heard for the first time while on a farm by a local farmer. He said it. And I was born in Bethlehem, Palestine. I was raised under occupation. I lived in an apartheid state. And that term itself was always so close to me. But then for me to hear it from a farmer talking about food apartheid,
yeah,
that definitely made me stop. And it really changed the trajectory of my career, because I didn't understand how something so basic and essential to every human life could be weaponized and politicized and then taken away. It's segregation. So food apartheid is exactly that, when it's intentional, when the policies in place, the programs in place are not set up in a way to deliver healthy food to the people who need it the most.
So I think this gets to sort of the personal background that you've mentioned, and you are the research and storytelling program manager for Food City. Is your personal experiences, like, was that what compelled you to get involved with the Food City initiative, or were there other forces at play?
My food journey started way back. I worked for Channel 4 locally here for 5 years. I was a senior digital producer there. And, you know, I've covered stories about food insecurity, but it would always be when the CDC has new data or when the St. Louis Area Food Bank is in dire need of donations, right? That's the headline of the news release that we get, right? Or literally they just covered a story with the headline, 1,000 turkeys given away for Thanksgiving, right? We only talk about food and the issue of hunger when it's relevant, right? When there's a press release about it, or when a grocery store shuts down in North St. Louis,
right?
And we never ask the question. We tell the same story, the same thing keeps happening over and over again, and the reality is not changing the way we're traditionally telling it in the media, right? And my research, my interest, it's multifaceted. You know, one, just working in the media, but two, also growing up in the Middle East, we grew our own food. Breakfast was eggs from our chickens and herbs and vegetables from the garden. That was my life every day for 17 years. And then moving here, I didn't see that anywhere. You know, I didn't have neighbors who grow their own food. And all the food that was available was all that's bad for you. So personally, I experienced what it was like to have access to food and then not having it. And in the working in the media, I've witnessed how the narrative that we keep on repeating is not really empowering people to tell them that the solution is so simple. You know, if people are hungry, you feed them. You feed them. And Missouri is an agricultural state. We have the second highest number of farms in the country, yet we have nearly 1 million Missourians who don't have access to healthy food. The reality is insane. Agriculture is a $94 billion industry in the state. How is it that people are starving, right? That the heart of American agriculture still has thousands and thousands of children starving. And I know it's a little bit difficult for people to see what that looks like, starvation, right? Because when you think of that word, you think of images you see on TV of children in Africa. But how that reflect in our life here is a 27, you know, 27 year difference in life expectancy.
Right,
from between Webster Groves and Fairground Park. And that's because of what your body has had access to, the nutrition, right? It's been 10 years since professors from WashU and St. Louis University released a report called For the Sake of All.
Right,
and they
right.
told us about that life expectancy. Mm-hmm. It was 18 years back then. It's been 10 years. And now we're at 27 years in life expectancy. And back then they told us this is because of an unequal distribution of resources.
Yeah.
Okay, that's, do you have food? Do you have healthcare? I know I'm talking too much. I'm so sorry. There's so much I have to say.
Well, there's a great deal there. And as you've noted about For the Sake of All report, we've talked about it on this show. Another thing that we have spoken about has to do with the urban farming piece. And I've noticed that there's been a great deal more conversation about that. We've talked with local farmers on the show. We've talked with Tasha Phoenix and with Leah Lee. Why is it important, though, to discuss urban farming as a piece of improved food infrastructure versus these are individuals who are doing for themselves and growing food to be self-sufficient?
It's quite fascinating when you listen to these farmers and their stories and how they even got into farming. So many of them started doing it because they got so tired of waiting for somebody else to do something about it. Or a family member had gotten sick and died a little too soon, right? And then when they look into it, oh, that was preventable. It was a diet-related illness, right? And, mm-hmm. and these are the leading causes of death in the country. And so our farmers chose to change their lives and go back to the land because they knew that the solution lies within there. And when you're talking about infrastructure, and the simple solution of hunger is feed people, is grow food. Despite Missouri being an agricultural state, the majority of the crops we grow go to make animal feed and biofuels, you know, and all the rows of corn that you see all around, it ends up looking like high fructose corn syrup and sugary sodas, which is the main source of calories for people who are reliant on SNAP, you know. So the infrastructure, we keep exploiting the land, extracting from it, and we put pavements instead of gardens, healthy food that grows abundantly and freely from nature, you know, costs a fortune mm-hmm. compared to food that's processed 1,000 times and coming from a factory. So the solution is with these farmers. There is no food without land, and there's no food without farmers. And so with Food City, our vision of a food for all St. Louis, where everybody has access to nutritious food, regardless of your age, gender, and zip code, to ensure they have that food, our farmers need access to the land, access to capital, to resources, and they need to be seen as the solution, you know, as the change makers here. If they stop growing our food, we're going to continue relying on everything that's processed and slowly killing us.
Mm-hmm. For those who do not, or who want to be part of a solution, how can people who do have access to food and healthy food advocate for those who do not? I mean, is it, you mentioned money, is it about where we spend our dollars or something more?
Yeah, I think if you are someone who has the purchase power, then that could be your vote. You know, when we say shop local, that doesn't just mean your local grocery store. It's also your local food grower. I think everybody is a food advocate. We just don't know it. You know, as a child, you cry to eat, right? As a mother, you fight to feed your children the best food that you can. The thing to break is to get out of our individualistic way of living and to really look at the society as a whole when we talk about food access. If you have the purchase power, you definitely spend money, put it back in the hands of our local growers. And then if you work at a school, you have a duty to advocate for better health, you know, better access to healthy food at your school. If you work at a hospital, you can be advocating for your patients. If you work at a newsroom and you have journalists who are telling the stories of everybody in their community, they also need nutritious food. So it's not, the topic of food insecurity is not just in certain areas that have been lacking investment. It's also us caring for our neighbor who's having a job, working a job with us, and they lack access, right? They might have this good job, but their neighborhoods, they don't. Maybe they don't have enough money to feed everybody and their family. So we all have a part, and I think the only way change will happen is if we all recognize everybody's right to access healthy food, because we can't expect people to thrive and to be these, active members of society if they're fighting hunger and disease.
Mm-hmm. And in our last 40 seconds or so, mm-hmm. how is it that Food City will be measuring whether its efforts to improve food infrastructure are working?
I can tell you by the fact that our farmers are expanding, they're building capacity, they're starting to own the land. That's another big problem with food mm-hmm. sovereignty is having actually owning the land. And we see that in the city. So many small farmers who had a garden lease with the LRA could easily lose it at any moment because they don't actually own it. So we're measuring it by the number of people we're feeding, by connecting our farmers with resources from the USDA. Look, there's so many resources out there. We have the land, we have the food, we have the technology. It's just the people who need it don't have access to it. And that is part of our job, is to bring them closer to it.
Sarah Banura is the Research and Storytelling Program Manager for the Food City Initiative. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Jada Jones.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio.
Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.